Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Hi, I'm Dave Barnes.
And I'm John McLaughlin.
And welcome to Dadville.
Dadville is a podcast where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of awesome dadding.
It's funny thoughts and deep talks.
So please, enjoy your time here in Dadville and enjoy this episode with...
Aaron Hart from Need to Breathe.
Here we are, Dadville, folks. This one's been a long time coming.
This is a long time coming.
We have... been excited about this, and we've scheduled numerous times, and Bear has just said, guys, not right now.
No, not now. I got big things going. Big things.
That would be such a great response. Guys, just in one email, I got big things going on.
Big things going. Not today, guys.
Not today.
Not today.
Big things.
Do you think that this is the manliest voice we've had?
Oh, my God, yeah.
In Dadville?
Yeah.
Golly. Really?
I feel like we should put out... We'll put out the regular episode, but we should also put out a bonus episode that's just Bear's voice.
Just talking.
We take us
just
out.
Just like a sound pack.
Yeah.
On splice. On splice. Yeah. You realize later there's a
big things.
There's
coming.
A band you're not in.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
It's like charting.
You're going to get a check in the mail and you're like, oh, I guess I'm a part of that band.
God, that would be amazing.
I've always wanted to do that, to have like the voice, the pitching thing, you know, but like have it be awesome if it was my tone.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? If you could just put it on anybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just be like.
That'd be a lot cheaper way to work.
Jeez. You're just sitting like.
I'm in nine bands right now. I never tour.
Yes.
It's awesome.
Exactly. I feel like that was sort of the 70s. Like, I feel like those guys were just in 100 bands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that was the craziest thing, reading that Eric Clapton autobiography. I mean, that thing was crazy anyway, but, like, that was a season of music where he has a story where he said, I'm literally sitting in London. This is, like, early 70s. I'm sitting in London, and Ginger Baker, his drummer from, like, a couple of iterations of bands, called him and was just like, hey, let's play some shows. And he's like, cool. He's like, let me just call the band. And he calls booking agents. He's like, we just want to do, like, 15 shows in the States. But cool. And, like, a month later, be like, all right. We got all the stadiums booked. He'd be like, all right, just get the band together. We'll rehearse a couple of days and go do some shows. And this would happen numerous times. And, you know, he was that guy, too, that, like, Wynwood would call. Or, like, he was kind of that perfect artist where he could also be in the band, too. So it'd be, like, Phil Collins or somebody would call and be like, let's just do some shows. And he'd be like, cool, I'll be in the band and also do some songs.
Yeah.
I was like, what a weird time of music that just, like, let's book 15 random stadium shows and call it a summer. Cool, got
call
a book.
It a summer.
You know? Speaking of stadium shows, Bear Reinhart, we are excited to have you here. So what we do, Bear, is we read what we call the brag sheet.
Okay.
About you. There's a lot of, this is a doozy. There's a lot that you've done in your life. So here we go. This is your life. Formed in 98, Need to Breathe, which Bear is the lead singer and most attractive person in.
Hmm.
I like you didn't say
maybe.
No. I like
No. I think Seth is the most attractive, the bass player, for sure.
Seth is,
he's a good-looking
guy.
He's
a good-looking guy.
That hair. Need to Breathe attracted a loyal grassroots following their first debut, Daylight, and its follow-up, The Heat. 2 years later, The Outsiders became their first top 20 entry in the Billboard Top 200 before eventually going gold. That's amazing. During 2011, The Reckoning landed at number one on the Billboard Top Rock Albums chart and number six on the Top 200. In addition to bowing at number three on the Top 200, 2014's Rivers in the Wasteland yielded the platinum-selling Hot 100 hit Brother with Gavin DeGraw and Multiplied, which garnered their first Grammy nod. Meanwhile, Hard Love marked their highest chart bow yet, debuting at number one on the top Billboard top current album sales chart, as the title track Hard Love featuring Andra Day scored a gold plaque. And they spelled plaque like English, like British, which is always really impressive. Along the way, the headline had sold out iconic venues such as Red Rocks, the Greek Theater, Ryman Auditorium, name a few. The group picked up a pair of nominations at the Billboard Music Awards and received praise from People, Rolling Stone, Forbes, and more. Now, Need to Breathe reflect the freedom of youth on their seventh full-length offering, Out of Body, over a rich soundtrack of soulful rock with stadium-sized scope. I love that. Stadium-sized scope. And poetic and intimacy, introduced by the singles Hang On and Seasons. They also just released a new album, Into the Mystery, which y'all did together during the pandemic.
Yeah.
In the house in South Carolina?
Columbia, Tennessee.
Oh, Columbia, that's right. Yeah. Not Columbia, South Carolina, yeah. Columbia, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Which that record is wonderful, by the way.
Thanks, man.
God, it's good. I love that record. Also has a solo artist project, which I was jamming this morning. Supply and Demand is a bop. That song is so good. Called Wilder Woods, which came out in 2019. So here's the question we always love, which, by the way, that is just, look at how much that is. Look, it's like I have to scroll. So I love asking this question. Like, if I read that to 15-year-old Bear, what, like, that exactly? I just kind of time warped in. I said, hey, this is going to be you in, you know, 20 years, whatever. What is he saying? Like, what's.
Obviously. really, when I was 15, I thought, this is going to be easy, you know? But way beyond what I thought, you know what I mean? I mean, there wasn't a, when it first started playing, like the goal was like the rock club. It was the Handlebar in Greenville, South Carolina.
Oh, God.
It was like, if we could sell it out, that would be it.
Yeah.
I mean, I never thought of a venue beyond that.
Yeah. Were you, was 15, because I mean, obviously football's a big part of this.
Yeah.
Which is sports. But are you starting to sing at 15?
Yeah, a little bit. I think I got the first guitar around that time.
Okay.
And my dad was a preacher, so and we were like charismatic. So it was like a diverse band situation. My dad came from music, so he liked all that.
Oh, I didn't know.
So it was like
that.
These like, he used to play, he played trumpet for like Roy Clark and Glen Campbell, and he was on
Hee Haw.
That's cool.
Wait. Your dad was.
Yeah. He was in a band, like Chicago era stuff.
Yeah.
He was in a band in college, and they got hired to do all these gigs, and it was like the Rhinestone thing, Pinky Rings, you know, the whole, like.
that's a great quality. Yeah, right.
That tells you exactly who I'm talking about.
You know,
oh, my gosh. So they would get hired as, like, the horns.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So he was just around that. So when he started his own church, he was a youth director before that. So, like, when he started his own church, it was like, we got to have this awesome band. So it was all these people on stage. And that's how. I was just like, I got to get up there and figure this out. So that's how I started playing.
Did you get up there by singing, or did you play it like rhythm and then?
No, yeah, I played a little. I actually started writing songs first.
Oh wow, for the church.
Yeah. Okay. Because I wasn't good at, like, I didn't have anybody around that was like teaching me, and I used to clean the church on the weekends for a job.
Wow.
And they had the like song chart, like a worship chart things would have like chords made out on the sheet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so that's how I learned how to play, because I'd go up there, it's like three or four chords, you kind of recognize a song. And then I started writing songs like 2 months after I learned, you know, G,
Holy
C, and D.
Uh-huh. What, like, what age is that?
Probably 16.
Okay.
And
do you remember like the very first song you wrote?
I don't. I wanted to be in a band right away. The first band, I named it Total, which was TOTL, Tired of the Lame.
Oh, my gosh.
I had a little bit of angst.
Oh, you know, I love that get it so much.
It was there from the beginning.
Yeah. That's right.
Okay, so your dad was a trumpet player
is such a fun
in a
fact.
Horn group that would get hired from, like, touring bands would come in and they would hire
his
horn section.
Yeah.
Also a youth pastor
after
at the
that.
Same time.
So, no, not the same after time. That. After okay. that, yeah. He got kicked out of college a couple of times, which probably explains a lot.
Wow.
And then, started doing, my mom and him were choir directors, first job.
Oh, wow. Is this all in South Carolina?
No, I think the first one, well, I think maybe the first job was in South Carolina.
Okay.
But, they're both from Alabama.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So yeah. Was this
that's
like
sort of the
a,
Bear Bryant thing.
That's right.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
right. That's right. Okay.
So was this like a, some sort of like, you know, road to Damascus moment for him? Like he was crazy and then he found the Lord kind of a thing and then he became a youth pastor.
I don't know. I'd have to ask him, about that. I don't think it, not necessarily. I think what he got kicked out of college for were really dumb things, One of them was he was cutting circles out of record covers, like the size of quarters, and using them in the washing machine.
Oh my gosh! Are you kidding me?
Yeah, which I think there's got to be smart.
Somebody. Yes, somebody at that university's kind of administration was like, "We got to kick him out," but this guy's going to be fine.
Or before we kick him out. There's some ingenuity here, guys.
Exactly.
We can use this power for good if we can harness this.
He said his favorite joke in college was to put in the ice cream line at the like cafeteria or whatever, they would rig it up, put mashed potatoes in there instead of the ice cream and put the syrup over the top and just watch people take big bites into it.
Is he still like that? Is he kind of a prankster type?
Yeah, he always was. Yeah. So when I was until I was 10, he ran a church camp, and basically he was that guy. It was the late night pranks.
He was that guy.
And like, you know, they had these, they had cabins and whatever, and the person in the cabin that was
you
the
really
dirtiest.
Got shot.
I'm sorry, I'm in my mind, I'm back at Anderson University in my cafeteria, watching someone take a bite of their mashed potato cone.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't remember where I was.
The late night pranks.
Yeah, so he's like at the cabins, whoever, the dirtiest cabin, you literally would put them on a dock by the lake or whatever and chicken wire in front. And then he would get tons of rotten tomatoes and the rest of the campers could throw them at the kids.
No.
Yeah, this is before you could get sued for stuff like that. There's probably a lot of kids in therapy.
That camp is getting shut down in 2022 while they put the chicken wire up. That's right. They don't even have the kids out there yet. Someone's like, yeah, let's go ahead and shut this down. This is not going to go anywhere good.
It was so awesome to grow up like that because there really were no rules at that time.
Yeah.
That's like early 80s. Like they had a thing. He called it the Screaming Mimi. It was a zip line that went out over the lake, you know?
Oh, dude. Uh-huh.
And so, but he built it because he was like, well, you know, we don't have the money to whatever. So literally it's like 2x4s as the steps to go up this big tree and then a deer stand at the top.
Yeah.
And that's where they kind of send them off. But the problem was it was about 20 feet from the lake itself.
So you had a 20 foot right. death
So he put
area.
Bales of hay down there, of course.
Oh, problem solved.
And I watched numerous kids with slippery hands fall on the bale of hay and like, okay, a couple of broken arms and things like that. But just the thought of that could just be like, yeah, well, they'll probably be fine.
Yeah. So is mom like the kind of sweet, encouraging, quiet type to that? Is she the end of that?
100%, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
100%.
Yeah, she's kind of cleaning up the messes.
Yeah, she's rational.
She's sure. So in that time with football, I mean, because I know sports is such a big part of your coming up, I'm always really fascinated with guys and gals and bands, whatever, that sort of come. Because I feel like that's a pretty, it's not a well-worn path, but like, you do see a lot of, like, we've had, you know, people on before where they kind of did the sports thing and then all of a sudden they're just doing music. It's like, were those, as you were growing up, were those things sort of together? Did you see them competing? Did you sort of always have an eye on, like, the long game is music here?
Yeah, a little bit, especially college. Because, you know, there was a guy that played before me at Furman. There was a quarterback that was kind of into music, which was like kind of the reason I went there in a way.
Oh, wow.
And the coaches were kind of cool with it. I literally would play on a Saturday and then the band would pick me up in the van after the game. Wouldn't ride back with the guys on the bus and go play a show somewhere.
Was this really? Need to Breathe?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we were doing probably 60 shows a year probably.
In college?
When I was playing football in college, yeah.
Holy cow.
Which is crazy. I mean, I didn't study a lot, obviously. But something had to go.
What did you get? Did you get a degree in something?
Yeah, political science.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Wow.
Where did that come
totally
from?
Totally useless.
I was going to say, boy, did I not see that coming.
Yeah. Honestly, it came from the fact, like, I looked, it was a liberal arts school, so I just looked for something I was interested in. I really liked American politics.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was, and it only was 8 classes, literally, in a liberal arts thing. It was like, you can, you know, so I was like, that seemed doable. I think I can. And I just picked electives, the rest of the stuff. So it was like music and all kinds of religion classes and stuff.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So how many siblings do you have?
2.
Okay. Okay.
They're both younger.
Okay. So you're the oldest. Mm-hmm. Okay. And his dad, like, is he with his background in music, obviously, you guys, with you and Bo doing Need to Breathe, is he kind of like go get him? Or is he like, no, I've seen the dark side?
Yeah, he's 1,000% that guy. He was like, you will not come home if you don't finish. Because I got a scholarship.
Oh.
He's like, you know, you were dead to me if you don't finish college. It's kind of like that.
Oh,
you
wow.
don't want to be out on a bus and doing whatever. You know, like he was very. Now, as soon as that was over, he was a huge fan.
Our okay.
No doubt.
Okay.
Our biggest.
He just wanted you to get a degree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was big to him. And I think probably because he didn't.
Okay. You know? Uh-huh. Yeah.
He what's didn't, the what's yeah. the age difference with you and Bo?
Like 15 months.
And then
okay.
and so, then another is brother sister after that.
Yeah, sister.
Oh, okay.
And it's about around the same. So
okay, like, yeah. okay, okay, okay.
But and I is mean, Bo in Need to Breathe at this time?
No.
When you're in college?
Oh, yeah, probably in the middle of college somewhere. So we first got the band together with some kids on the hall of college, of course.
No like way.
Djembe acoustic, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Of course the djembe.
Yep. Yeah. Gotta have it. And then we, as soon as I went to Bo, I was like, dude, you got to learn how to play because I think you'd be great.
So he wasn't even playing.
Playing at all.
That is
I am so fascinated whenever that happens.
A million times,
when,
yes.
When it's like seemingly such a pragmatic decision that it's like, I want to be, like, we're doing a band, you got to be in the band, you got to learn an instrument and then be in the band.
Well, he was a That's showman
so
already.
Like, yeah.
He's a very funny guy, like really yeah. outgoing, yep. people love him. So like, I knew we needed that.
Yeah.
I wasn't that. You know, it's too serious to be that.
Man.
Dave,
Louise, yeah.
I want to give a shout out. Yeah. And when I give a shout out, I always laugh because it just brings me so much joy
you
to give a shout out to Claritin
yes.
for supporting this episode and providing us with free
oh,
samples.
You know it, John. This time of year, my allergies are in fuego. They're mm-hmm. always on the attack, but I use this and you should too.
Oh, I do, Dave. Every day in our house.
Yeah.
Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D.
Designed for serious allergy sufferers, which is me raising my hand, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill to relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better.
This double-action combination of prescription-strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, and itchy nose and throat and sinus congestion and pressure with ease.
John, I've been taking Claritin D for my allergies for a long time, and it's been an absolute life changer. I can go for a run without my eyes watering. I may be crying, but it's not
sure,
from allergies.
Totally different.
And I can sing without feeling like I have like a big old, let's not even call it a frog. It's like a toad.
It's like a family of toads.
It's a family. It's a turtle.
Yeah.
In my throat.
So, you ready to live life as if you don't have allergies?
Yeah, me.
It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter.
Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed. Danny.
Dave.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, as dads, we know it can be hard to have a meaningful moment in the home. You
oh
know
my!
That?
I yeah. I do know that.
Yeah.
In particular, Dave.
Yeah.
We know it can be hard to pull everyone together on the weekend, especially
yeah.
not to mention for a Sabbath practice.
Oh, well, that's tough. That's yep. why we really like this new resource called the Sabbath Box.
Mm-hmm.
It helps you stop and enjoy God with each other.
That's right. You know, as a dad slash parent, mm-hmm. which is how I refer to myself
always
all the time,
have, always
having been. Something tangible is key to reminding us each week to stop and have a meaningful moment with our family. The Sabbath Box is just that thing.
The box is durable enough for the kids to interact with it, but the best part is that it mm-hmm. makes us stop each week and spend some intentional time together.
The way it works is the box sits on a shelf
okay.
or hangs on the wall
yep.
all week long
mm-hmm.
and says create and cultivate,
mm-hmm.
right? Reminding us of the good of work.
Yep.
Then, on the day that you've decided to stop and enjoy each other, you flip the box top to the other side where it says stop and enjoy.
That's right. The box comes with a 5-week guide to teach you about the Sabbath, and it includes prayers and scripture you can read. It's all right there.
So if you've ever wanted to start the Sabbath, but you haven't, Sabbath Box is for you. And if you have a Sabbath practice, but you want to increase the intentionality or take it to the next level, the Sabbath Box helps you do that.
Listen, we love it, and you should go get it. Visit goodkind.shop and use the code DADVILLE at checkout for 20% off a Sabbath Box.
That's goodkind.shop and use the code DADVILLE at checkout for 20% off a Sabbath Box.
But isn't it weird? This is something I have to be careful about because I could talk about this for hours, but how people have these things in them that they're good at that they kind of don't know they're good at. That is a fascinating
yeah.
thing. And especially like with you, I'm sure a lot of people growing up with you have been like, yeah, he's an athlete. And it's like, yeah, have you heard him sing? It's like, no. Does right, he sing? Yeah. Like, yeah, he actually plays these three chord songs that are pretty great.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, when you're in your teens.
Yeah.
And then it's hysterical when you go to your brother and like, hey, you should play guitar. And then it's like, oh, wow, you're, a few years later, you really are good at this.
Yeah. Well, and his songwriting immediately he was good at. And he was like, I remember I was at college, I went home, and he's like, I wrote my first song, I think. I was like, okay. And he had a bass that I had left there, and he was playing it on his lap, open tuned.
No.
Yeah. He's like, doesn't know how to play any instrument, but he just like, he's kind of just literally like thumbing, like he's playing pedal steel.
On a bass.
Yeah, yeah. On a bass. And he sings this song, and the melody's great. I was like, whoa. I think you've got to learn some chords so you can do this. Like you have
Holy
to.
Cow.
And so that came along slowly, but as far as that. But like immediately he was a showman. Like the first shows that we had, it was like, don't worry about it. Just play the root chord every time. You know, like.
You know what's funny? I remember, like that was kind of, I feel like when I first heard of you guys, it may have been, y'all were booked by CAA, right?
Yeah.
Matt Morgan. Didn't he book y'all?
It was Scott Clayton.
Scott Clayton. Yeah. And then Matt. By proxy. Yeah. But I remember that was the thing. Like, I remember somebody mentioned y'all's name, and I was like, oh, what's the vibe? And they're like, man, it's amazing music, and the live show's just bananas. And I was like, and that was, especially in our world, like, that wasn't something you heard a lot. It was like, the songs are good, or somebody's great, or piano playing. But, you know, it was just rare you heard, like, you got to see this show. And it was like,
it was a show.
It was a show.
Yeah.
Which is obviously such a, you know, it's y'all's brand now. It's like, it's a show.
Like, I feel like we were on the opposite end of that spectrum of like, it's like you're hanging out with them.
You really need to be quiet so you can hear the jokes.
Exactly.
They have some funny things to say in between. So, whatever there excitement, it's going to get tampered down. Yeah. If you're feeling it, he's going to start talking again, and then that energy is
going to
change.
Y'all are just actual musicians. That's what it is.
So with that transition going from, I'm curious about this with athletes too. Did you, I mean, this is probably maybe a weird question, but does some of like the discipline of sports or some of that energy kind of manifest itself?
And mostly bad ways at first.
Really?
Yeah. I remember
you're
like
just tackling.
Oh dude, I was so intense. I mean, college football is, you know, it doesn't matter what level, it's like pretty, it's just, you know, and so and they used to do this thing. We would watch film for football on Sundays after the games.
Yeah.
Bring the whole team in there.
Which you would, you would have had to get back from the gig for that.
Yeah, exactly. Go into this meeting at noon or so. We're all sitting in there, and it would be they'd have the laser pointer out. We watched special teams. So if somebody didn't make a block, they literally would just laser point that guy. Then they would make him stand up in the room, whole team, 75 guys in a room, and be like, I think you're better than that.
Dang.
You think you're earning your scholarship right now? That kind of like, it was intense, you know? And
positive
so,
shame.
Yeah, exactly. It's one way to motivate. But so the first show we did, first big show, I promise.
Oh, no, don't.
It's just unbelievable.
It.
You got a whiteboard and a laser pointer.
So we play at my high school. It's like a big deal. And I promote it like crazy. Like, we got 300 people in there. It's big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
So a lot of bad things happen. Break a bunch of strings. I didn't know if you change your strings, they don't break. I didn't know that. Didn't have a tuner. You know, it's like a lot of, it's a comedy of errors in this way. We had about a 50-year-old harmonica player who was kind of a hippie kind of, I don't know. Anyway, it was really interesting. But we get back and after, and I'm like, okay, guys, we're going to sit down and watch the game.
No, I swear.
Yes. And we're in like the Sunday school room of the church. Remember? And we get to like the conga solo. And this guy that we had just kind of freaks out. Like he gets nervous in the moment. And I don't, you know how like congas are like, you hit him a million times.
Oh, yeah.
As long as you play fast, like fine. But I think like in a break of a solo, it was, he might've hit him four times. Like it was like, like that. So I just, no sensitivity at all. It's like, what is this? You know, you're better than
you get
this.
The point.
Yeah. I'm like, let's rewind this back and watch
Stand
it.
Stand up, Frank.
So that band broke up pretty quickly.
Not better than
it was. It was the end of it. I mean, it was terrible. But I still have had a hard time learning that lesson. When we went out with Taylor Swift, it was the first time we'd been on big video screens and all that.
Oh, my gosh.
And they would give us this the print of the video every night. And I would make it, the band watch it on the bus. And it made us absolutely miserable.
Wow.
Because it's like, anything can be, and you're under that sort of magnifying glass, it's terrible. So I would say I've lost most of that. in a good way.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I again, I'm on the other end of the spectrum. Anytime we would ever get a board mix of a show or there's video or something, I actually just did this thing out in L.A. about a month ago where it's like this really nice, like multicam. We did a full show. And part of the like benefit of the gig is like you can have this and you can release it. And I'm like, maybe we will. I don't want to see a single frame of that. I don't want to see it. Right. But I know that it would be to my advantage to just like to just force myself to watch it, because I could be like, you know, I always do this one thing that I feel like adds a lot to the show, and now I'm seeing it adds nothing, you know,
right.
or
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah.
But I just can't force myself to look at it.
Well, I mean, honestly, I feel like that is a little bit like it's what y'all do, Bear, but it's like that's if you're going to be a band that is thinking about literally just even just visuals, which to
right.
me, sadly,
which is such a huge
just
part
flyover
of your
brand.
Show.
Like, what
sure.
does that even mean?
Yeah.
But you got to kind of do that.
Yeah.
And I remember like, yeah, we had seasons where the band would be like, let's listen back. I was like, I'm going to go just really anywhere else because
yeah,
this
right.
is the last
it's
thing
awful.
That I want to do.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know you know this probably as well as anybody does, but the thing I have learned is like, you got to be a little gracious because there is always going to be an energy that's real time that while you may have sang sharp, if you're there that night, it's
felt great.
It's
exactly.
working because right.
the
it's
room
making
is
people
so forgiving.
Yeah. There's
yeah.
no doubt.
Yeah. yeah.
Well, I think if you're going to watch it, I think what we've kind of made the rule is like, if you're going to watch it, watch some other people's shows as well.
Dude, that's what a great,
you
that's
know what I
mean? So wise.
And I think that like, you know,
I'll give you some of my tapes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Well,
you know what I mean? It just, you do get away with a ton
yeah.
and all these little insecurities that you have are not playing out
right.
in front of people.
Right. Right.
That's all in your head.
So did you meet your wife at college?
Yeah.
When did y'all get married? Like right after that?
Right after.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so she obviously is in on knowing, hey, music's the thing.
Yeah. She was my first booking agent in college.
No way.
Yeah. You know, like we were just enterprising is what we were.
Yeah.
You know, the band
yeah.
was like, we thought yeah. this should be big and we
yeah.
just got to. So like I wrote a script for her and made a company
oh, yeah.
name and everything.
Yeah. yeah.
And I was like, you got to call all these clubs or whatever. And we'll do it for 100, but tell them 200. You
know? Yeah. 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 yeah.
Like, don't take no for an answer. And if they say no, if they don't say no, you call them back the next day. That's
wow.
fine. I'll call you at 8 a.m. tomorrow. And yeah. it was like telemarketing to try to book our band. So I still have that calendar of her
oh
like writing all the notes
gosh,
and everything.
That's so sweet.
That's so
yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
It's that's got to be helpful because she's in at the bottom floor.
Oh, like, it's huge.
She's
yeah.
yeah, yeah. She's seeing the thing and going like, this is what we're both committed to.
Yeah. I'm not envious of the thing where it's like when people get big or whatever,
yeah.
that successful thing and then go right. try to do that, you know, make that happen. It's, yeah, it's, it, that part is awesome, but it's also very humbling because she's
yeah.
seen it all. You know what I mean?
Yeah. yeah.
And it's like, you want to hear this demo? Why don't you play it to me when it's finished? You know what I mean? It's like,
so has she ever gone out on the road with you guys? Early days?
Early days a little bit. Yeah.
yeah.
But not too much. She's a nurse practitioner now and she,
right.
she, and it's always been like, I don't want to be following you around. That's
yeah.
not
right.
like,
yeah.
I've got my own
right.
life. I don't want to try to. So she was great about coming to the shows, but now I would say that she doesn't like more than a couple of days. I mean, there's a lot of downtime on the road.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
yeah.
So she likes her own life.
Yeah. One of the things that I feel like Amy and I have been together, we've been married for 16 years, I think. And, but the first 7 years that I was touring that we were married, she came out on the road that whole time. And I feel like now, even though that feels like a long, you know, like way in the past, it is so helpful that she knows the road. Like you're
oh,
saying,
right.
she knows that it's a lot of downtime. She knows that like on any given night at, you know, 6:45, I've been sitting in this green room and she can picture the green room.
right.
She's like,
yeah, yeah.
I know. And I think if she hadn't done that, she may, when she's home with the girls, you know, and it's a rough day, she's like, John's out there partying, probably drinking champagne.
Yeah,
right.
yeah.
That's right.
yeah, yeah.
He's
yeah.
in the hot tub.
Yeah,
right.
Everything's great.
God.
Could you imagine how gross a hot tub at a club
oh,
would
geez.
Be?
Oh, there is one. You know that Norva.
Yes.
Norva.
Yes.
I forgot about that place.
Yeah.
Boy, they want to petri dish that water.
I know.
That's like there's an alien symbiote coming out of that thing.
So I want to ask if we're in the music world officially now, like there is, you know, from the outside looking in, from my perspective, there is such a, there's like an intensity around Need to Breathe and this kind of like, I'm curious what fuels that. I mean, it sounds like that intensity was always there. Like if you're writing out the script, you know,
right,
your very first pitch,
yeah,
and all that, where does that come from? Also, like, where does that come from at the beginning and now, you know, that you guys are decades into this career and very successful, you know, has it changed or how does that, what fuels it now?
I think originally, I think the music or the idea of the music, I just grew up with this, like, the charismatic thing was very gospel, you know, and so all the songs were like songs to live by or that it was like these, like old spirituals was kind of the thing. And that to me, that's what music was. It was like, when you're in a bad place, you need something to hang on to. That's what music is. So it was really foreign to me, the idea of like the Sunday drive kind of music when I was younger. Yeah. I just didn't, and I didn't gravitate towards that kind of music.
Wow.
It was like, so to me, it was like this emotional
kind of life and death a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the way I tried to write songs early on. And I think that's where that came from. I mean, and I'm also just like pretty serious, you know, driven person in that way. Yeah. And probably too much at the beginning for sure. But I think that's where it came from. I would say now, I would say the intensity, it's different. I would say the amount of work we do is equal. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think how we think about, we're about to go out One Republic and like that's all. Like I designed the whole stage set and I'm having it made out of cloth and all this, like I'm really into that thing.
Yeah.
And I think we have, as a band, we just have a ton of conversations about that. It's very intentional. Like the themes of the next record and all that, just like really, but I'll say what's changed probably is how hard, failure hits me.
Huh.
I think, you know, that you said life and death, that's the way I used to think of the band. Like you know, there was a time when if you'd have said like, hey, you know, I'll cut your hand off and you'd be successful, I'd be like, take it.
Yeah.
You know, I was at that level of like, I don't care what happens to me, we're making it.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't have that now. I'm not, there's a much more healthy sense of like, I think we think more about the process now, which is like a kind of a football thing in a way.
Yeah.
It's like that idea of like, I have this amount of time, I'm going to work really hard on it. But when that's done, I'm not going to look back and second guess it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that was my best ever for the amount of time I had to do this, and we're okay with the results, whatever they are.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the band is now. So it's much happier.
Yeah.
You know, our whole
organization. When did that shift start to happen?
Probably realistically, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago. And it's been more and more, it just feels like it's more and more healthy on the road. You know, a way to think about the stuff. But it's been a work in progress because
Was it kids easy to slip back to that kicked off the change or?
No, about 10 years ago, 11 years ago, I had just like a major rock bottom kind of moment. And I won't get too far into it except to say it was just like a really rough couple years.
Wow.
And it just made me reassess all that, you know, clearly like this was not sustainable the way I was doing it. And I was hurting people around me. And so I think that was
what got you into that place? Was it that drive? Was that sort of need for
I was miserable, just miserable
from that.
Yeah. I think, you know, I can think back to like the Taylor Swift tour was a great, like to me, divider in time for us because it felt like we, you know, I think when we got on it, we thought, oh, we're about to blow up. This is about to happen for all this stuff, you know. And then we're playing in front of like really 9-year-old kids. You know?
Yeah.
it wasn't the same kind of response we were hoping to get. And we're still trying to be a rock band in that scenario. And it just, we would just drive so hard to try to make it like any fans on those shows. It was just like, this is life. And it made us so miserable off stage. That you just, when you're that miserable and you still have to play the show, you know, you find ways to numb that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's basically, it's like you can't really compartmentalize it totally just as a healthy person.
So
you figure out ways. It's like, well, I'm going to drink a little bit more and now that'll quiet those demons until I can go out and play the show.
Right.
And
then
we just start that cycle again, you know?
Yeah.
And I think I still struggle with that at times, but not near to the degree.
Johnny.
Dave.
John. Johnny. Dave. John, when do you feel the safest?
I'd say right at this moment, you know, or whenever I'm in your presence, just generally.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I feel protected.
I would say the same, but if we're being honest, it's whenever I use ExpressVPN.
Yeah, I figured that was my biggest competitor.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
so have you ever browsed in incognito mode? Ooh. You know, it's probably not as incognito as you think.
Exactly. So how do you actually make yourself as invisible as possible online? You use ExpressVPN like I did.
Like you do, yeah. Well, there's a $5 billion class action lawsuit. That's $5 billion against Google in California, where it's accused of secretly collecting user data. Mm. Google's defense?
Yeah, what?
Quote, incognito does not mean invisible, unquote.
Turns out that even in incognito mode, your online activity still gets tracked and data brokers still get to buy and sell your data.
But every time you connect to ExpressVPN, you get a random IP address shared by many other ExpressVPN customers.
Ooh.
That makes it harder for the third parties to identify you and harvest your data.
Harvest your data is three of my least favorite words.
That's right.
Yep. Best of all, ExpressVPN is super easy to use. No matter what device you're on, phone, laptop, or smart TV, all you have to do is tap one button for instant protection.
So if you really want to go incognito and protect your privacy, secure yourself with the number one rated VPN. Visit expressvpn.com/dadville and get 3 extra months for free.
That's expressvpn.com/dadville. Go to expressvpn.com/dadville to learn more. What is that in that season like? As you're walking through that and you're sort of finding yourself in this rhythm where you're like, okay, I'm kind of, you know, and you're starting to get a little bit of like, okay. What that's got to be weird for a marriage, obvious ways,
sure.
But also because you're not struggling with this at home. You know what I mean? So it's one thing to kind of have a hard time with something when you're around your spouse and you're kind of battling through something together, you know?
Yeah.
It's got to be such a different thing because the venue changes. It's like,
it's
this long distance.
I found out that even though it doesn't, the circumstances are not as like pressurized at home.
Yeah.
Those things are still there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I would say my wife notices way before I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Even from a distance.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think there's always, like, I would use that analogy of like, you know, we're walking towards a cliff. I'm in a fog. I don't know what's there. And she, you know, she can see it.
Yes.
Right. You know, and there's an element to that I feel that's true.
Yeah.
And it's really, I'm just, you know, I'm stubborn to that. And I think it's just the natural thing with the road stuff. And even you can say that as a parent too.
Yeah.
Where you quit listening to yourself. You don't really know how you're feeling. Hmm. You're just like, I just got to do this job.
Yeah.
Like I got to, you know, perform for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And right. I think to me, even in this last tour we just did, it was a huge kind of like eye opening thing for me. Cause it's the first time we've toured since the kids have been older or old enough to like really know what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was incredibly lonely to me.
Hmm.
And I don't think I realized, you know what I mean? How that was affecting me at the time. I didn't even know I was lonely. I just knew I was like this. I don't really want to be here today. I don't know what's going on. You know, the whole day seemed longer and it wasn't until I got home when I was like, man, I've been in a bad way.
Wow.
And you know, counseling and all that stuff, just kind of like digging deeper. And it's like, man, I was really lonely. I miss my kids, you know, like probably more than they miss me.
Right, right.
And so since then, we've like literally made tons of changes in the way we're going to tour because we're at that place we're able to do that.
Yeah.
You know,
what do you do about that? Like, what does it look like?
I think for me, like, you know, because the rock thing has never been this weekend warrior thing like country is, you know, we would just go out forever.
It'd just
stay out. So we're kind of doing this every other weekend thing. We're always like, just give me, you know, every 7-8 shows, I need 2 days at home.
Yeah.
Let me fly home and do that. Or let's find a couple of days off on the road where I can bring the kids out.
Yeah.
We can actually do stuff.
Yeah.
So that's a big part of it. And also just, you know, trying to say no to some things, you know, that gets harder and harder.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, you got to do this. You got to do this radio show. You got to do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, do we?
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Well, I would think that the Taylor Swift tour, would have helped with that. Because at that time, you know, it's 2011, you were handed like, hey, this is the biggest tour in the world and you guys are on it. And of course you would feel like, okay, this is, I mean, if this isn't our like shot or whatever, you know, for lack of a better word, you know, what is? And then you go through all that and you come out the other side and you realize like, you know, anything from that point on that is quote unquote, like we have to say yes to this. I would imagine it would become easier to get a better perspective on all those things.
I think the tricky part is that, you know, you're looking to your career or the music or the response from the crowd or whatever, just like naturally, you're looking for that to give you satisfaction. You just never will.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that's tricky about it. Cause on that tour, I remember we had all these days off cause there were like some stadium tours in it and all this stuff. So like we would do secret shows.
Yeah.
So we ended up playing 140 shows in 7 months.
Oh my gosh.
Insane.
Yeah. And so, and we were doing that because we weren't getting the response from the crowd the night we were playing with her. So like, well, let's play tomorrow night in a club for 300 people. And we would play for 2.5 hours, just like,
jeez.
And we would get this little bump from that, you know what I mean? And then the next night sucks. And then it's like that sort of cycle. But the truth is, like, in the end, even those little things never are.
Yeah.
There's always like the night after Red Rocks. There's always like,
yeah, right.
You know
right,
what I mean?
Right. Right. So, absolutely.
You're in the middle of Iowa somewhere after you played Red Rocks the night before. And it's like, well, and so it just doesn't have that same, you know, there's a reason that all those guys, you know, in the 70s or whatever did drugs and all that.
Yeah.
Just because it really is a little bit of a, unless you can have a perspective of like, you're not doing this for yourself.
Hmm.
I think, I think that ultimately is like, if I can settle into that, I thought Chris Martin and Coldplay does that, like that maybe better than anybody I've seen, you know, in the sense of like, this is about you guys. It's we're a part of
it.
But like I'm here for this unique moment tonight.
Yes.
And that might be 10 of you, it might be 10,000, whatever it is. If I can get my head around that, then there's big satisfaction from that, from that serving piece.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I'm just looking for the response, like it always is lower than you want it to be almost.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. God, that's such that is I laughed. I was talking to somebody about this like in the last year, but how I feel like the first sign of maturity I maybe ever had about my career was realizing I'm still in the service industry.
Yeah.
And it's like, I feel like that's, I can always tell when an artist has grown up is when that becomes a part of the conversation. When you see somebody sort of go, oh, okay, sorry. Took me a while. I guess this isn't really about me after all.
Right.
Yeah. You know, but really trying to give people some sense of, you know, I hope you got what you came here for tonight. And I just want to make sure everybody's enjoying it or get the thing that the moment they came for, the couple moments they came for. Because you're right. You sleep better. You're just not quite as, there's not that, how did I do? How did I do? Oh my gosh, I missed that note. What did I do?
Right.
It's
right.
More like, you know, I've found that I do that a lot where I'll, you know, bump into people after the show or like if you're hired for a private gig or like something where somebody books you for it, kind of going, hey, how'd y'all feel? I'm like, man, we loved it. I'm like, that's okay. That's the all, final
that's
call.
What we're doing.
That's
yeah,
what,
exactly.
So we move on, you know,
yeah.
Instead
of. If I could, you know, press a button and take social media out of existence, I probably would press the button. But one good thing that does come from social media is all those stories. Actually, we just did a Father's Day episode where somebody wrote in and they were talking about this Matt Carney concert that they went to and they kind of gave this whole backstory. There was this beautiful story that, you know, culminated in them going to this Matt Carney show. And Matt, who knows if when he's on stage at this show has any idea that this couple out of all these people have this story that would be so meaningful to him as a musician. And I think social media is a platform where we can interact with our fans and kind of hear some of those stories, you know.
Yeah, especially, I mean, like I think about the old days where you could go to the merch table or whatever.
Right.
You know, and just, you can actually meet people and hear their story.
Just plug like, in. It was just like a love tank.
Yeah.
Just like, tell me great things.
Yeah. But now, you know, now it's like, we'll go a month without seeing fan.
That's right.
You know, it's like you're in, and even those big shows, you walk off and it's in the dress room, it's quiet.
You know, one of the, I don't know if you've heard this episode. If I ran like a singer, songwriter, artist school, I swear, I think the first thing that I would have, and I don't care if it's like a kid who's 12 that's really great and we're like, he's like, I want to be an artist, or it's a 50-year-old man who's like, I'm going to actually try this for the first time, because I think it would make sense to all of them. Required listening for me is there's a Broken Record episode with Rick Rubin and Andre 3000.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It is required listening. I've never heard, I mean, Rick Rubin is a genius, but sure. Real talk, I've always been kind of like, what's he do? Honestly.
Yeah, I know.
Like, because I've had friends that have worked with him.
He's
and
like a glorified motivational poster.
Kind of. Yeah. And I've had friends that have worked with him and like, yeah, it's interesting, man. He's kind of, He's not really
sleeping on the couch.
Well, he'd not be there half the day and kind of poke in and be like, and then he'd leave you. But listening to that interview, I'm like, that's why. Because he sits with Andre and Andre's just like, his heart is just filleted wide open. And he's super vulnerable. And he's talking about like frustrations and the reasons why Outkast hadn't, but what reasons why he hadn't, like how he's kind of lost his way a little bit artistically. And you hear Rick. He is like, just like Sherpa. He's kind of holding his hand, and he'd ask questions. Andre'd be like, oh, I've never thought about it. But one of the things that Andre says, probably five or six things that I was on a run listening to that interview, and I stopped running to type them on my phone because like sweat pouring on my. But one of the things he said that I think about all the time, he's like, the thing that is so hard about the more successful you get in music, and the reason I bring it up is kind of what you were just alluding to. He's like, the bigger the crowds get, the farther away they get. Physically, because the bigger that, you know, they push them back a little bit more, and then it's like you get in arenas and stuff, and whatever y'all are playing, they're the way back there.
Yeah.
And so that interaction that you began your career in, which is so symbiotic. I mean, there is a kid with his hands on the, he's slapping your feet, and you're, and it's like you're rocking the thing. All of a sudden, that kid is 50 feet back.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just squinting to see if anybody's even.
Yeah.
There, because you just can't, the room's dark or whatever. And it really was, I mean, obviously the analogy works too. It's like the bigger you get, the further people tend to get, your fans, your listeners get further away. And so to your point, it's so true. You can get done with these shows, you're like, I think I did well, but like,
I don't really know. No, yeah, totally.
You know?
Yeah, I think the band has got, it's nice, you know, because everybody is a grown up now, which is awesome, you know? And we're very encouraging of each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which we did not have in the past. It was basically like, do this or,
there's
consequences.
Yeah.
Whereas now it feels very, and people are quick to apologize. Mm. Not that they need to, but just like, hey man, I screwed that lyric up. They're like, dude, nobody. Yeah. It's all good. It was great. Yeah. The thing you said after was awesome. Yeah. You know, so when that, you know, you have that, that's obviously ultimately the thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know how, it's hard to do. It really is.
But like, it would make sense to me too, even if y'all didn't know you were doing this, even at like an osmotic level, that to go from one night with Taylor to 300 the next night, because you're like, oh my God.
I need this connection.
Yeah. There you are. Yeah. Like there's the people. I see their eyes looking at me. I see the guy sweating, dancing, and play, you know, because you really are like, it was like you need a hit again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's dangerous. I mean, I think when we talk about it a lot, like that's, so then what happens is you need this connection.
Yeah.
But you're wanting a connection without rejection, or the possibility of rejection, right? Which is not really connection.
So I think
to me, that's where I'm at, like with it. I'm always like just trying to be careful about that part. Like,
yeah.
If I put too much weight on what they do back.
Yeah.
You know, I'm automatically in a bad relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think that's, I still struggle with that. Still kind of working through it.
Well, you posted, over the last couple of days, you guys posted these videos of you guys reading.
Oh like yeah. Right.
Mean tweets or whatever, which I love those videos. How do you guys deal with that? How do you personally deal with those kinds of things?
I'm less and less on there, to be honest. I think I'm like, at least in this way, like I've had, like when I was doing the Wilder Woods project, I just had someone basically send me the things that were
pertinent,
like things that I might need to know. Yeah. Just send me a screenshot. So I'm not looking through all the bad stuff.
Yeah.
And it's obviously gotten worse and worse. And I think probably a lesson I learned was like on the, after COVID thing, there was a lot of social media griping just because everybody's at home and they're upset and they're lonely and sad and all those things. And I feel like we went out and, because of the COVID thing, but also because my brother left the band like a year or two before that, it was like what you read, you know, on a Facebook thing was horrific.
Yeah.
And we go to the shows, and if I hadn't have never read that, I would never know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. And even some of these people that are making those comments are in the front row. You know?
Right. Exactly.
And they're having a great time.
Exactly.
And I was like, wow, this really represents such a small percentage of people. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't even necessarily, like, they're not even wording it well. They're just insensitive. You know what I mean? Like, they're actually still our fans of the band.
Yeah.
You know? It's just, so I think that to me was a at least an eye-opener of kind of like, man, night after night, I was like, wow, this does not... All this riffraff that's going on, it's like not affecting the show really.
Yeah.
How do I need to let that affect me or worry too much about it? I think we, you want to have, a healthy, whatever that is, level of respect for your audience. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, like clearly we are doing it for them.
Yeah.
And so you want to listen if there are things that you're missing.
Right.
You
know,
if tickets aren't like, that's always been a thing for me, ticket prices and where, and how that process goes and all that is always a fight, you know, because you do want it to be the best experience for your fans, but you've got to figure out how to pay for all the lights.
Right.
So you got to figure out that. Yeah, exactly. So how do you, you know, so I think there's a level of that. I'm trying to serve that.
Yeah.
But that when it becomes about, you know, these opinions or hateful things, it's like it,
one of my favorite things. I got emotional hearing this. I was listening to Questlove Supreme. I love his podcast, and he told this story about being, I've told this story a lot, but I think it's in Italy. They were playing with the Red Hot Chili Peppers, so the Roots were opening for Red Hot Chili Peppers, and Quest is talking about, like, he's like, it's one of the coolest things I've ever seen in my life of playing music. I think Flea or somebody in the band had said, like, hey, make sure to check out the show. I'd love to get your thoughts. Because, you know, I didn't realize, but Questlove does a lot of, like, MD stuff. Like,
Yeah.
And he said, so I watched the show, and he's like, I noticed that about every three or four songs, they would just stop playing and congregate in the middle of the stage, like a powwow. And they'd start playing it. And he's like, that was my first note, was like, don't do that. Like, it kills the momentum. He's like, do you not have set lists or whatever? So,
right.
Show gets done, and he goes over to Flea, and Flea's like, hey, what's your name? He's like, hey, what are y'all doing? Like, what is the little, he's like, are y'all figuring out the next song? He's like, no, man. I mean, this blew my mind. He said, we get together and we're just encouraging each other. he goes, what? He goes, literally, like, I'll be like, Chad, dude, God, that drum fill, bro. And he's like, Anthony, God, you nailed that chorus. Like, that's great. And then he said at some point in those, they'll go, guys, can you believe we get to do this?
Look at all these
people.
Right.
How amazing is that?
Like, kill
They've
me.
Been doing it for like 30 years.
But I think the thing that I thought about with that, and it's kind of what you're alluding to, Bear, is I think you got to do it for that long to actually get to that place.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, you got to put some miles and years into going where you are now, where you're going, like, what a gift. Like, I want to serve this crowd. Like, we get to, but it wrecked me. Like, I almost crashed the car because I was just, like, so overwhelmed by these older guys that are going, God, can you believe, look at all, like, he said it was in Rome or whatever, and he's like, you know, I was just telling Chad, like, dude, look at all these people out of here.
Yeah.
You know, instead of like, dude, what the hell?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm super jealous of this. Like, now we have this, like, really intricate talkback system, which is like, so we were all wearing in-ears and everything, you know, but so, like, Josh, our piano player, has this. He has a couple, actually. So he's like one that goes to everybody in the crew, just the band, you know.
Oh, wow.
And so, but I can't have that because they're always talking while I'm talking. You know what I mean?
Right.
But we record everything, and I've listened in a few times, and it is the best because that's what it is.
That's so great.
And it's
so,
like,
wait, are you hearing Josh's talk back?
Not while I'm
while
playing.
You're talking?
No. No, so that's I'm the only one who's not hearing.
Yeah, because you're singing.
I'm either singing or like just talking to the crowd. He's just messing with the and it's always that kind of stuff, super encouraging. And like after the fill, he'll literally be coaching them. Like, here comes the fill, Bubba. You know, like, let's go. You know, he does all this stuff. It's great. Like, I want to release that at some point.
Dude, I think people would love that.
I would love that.
So I'm super jealous of having. I wish I could. I'm always like, what are y'all laughing about?
Yeah.
You know,
there was a time where Trey Smith was our front of house guy, and he would do that. He would be back at the front of house board running sound, and he would do a talk back just to the guys in the band, and I couldn't hear him.
Yeah.
But he would always have, like, mid-song, he would have them do something like, all right, guys, at the downbeat of the chorus, you guys have to turn around and look at the back of the stage for two beats and then come back. And I would just be seeing them, like, and I would try to guess, like, what was the cue? What are they supposed to be doing?
Yeah.
So you have, is it three boys?
Yes.
Three boys. What? So what has that transition been like? Like, I mean, obviously you've always been dealing with people. Like, you're in a band, you deal with people all the time.
Sure.
Now you're just dealing with tiny people.
Yeah.
But like, what is life like now with you having this family? You've gotten, you know, it sounds like with shows and the road, you're kind of getting that to a place that's, you know, you're it's manageable and you kind of know what you're doing a little more. Like, what does life look like now with that, with like a family, with the road, with shows?
Maybe? Yeah, it's pure insanity. It's like, it's harder, by far. I mean, I would say if I have all three of them on myself, like one day of that is like a month on the tour. That's how hard it is.
Yeah. That's great, yeah. Man.
Because I'm like, I've told my wife that, she's like, I'm like, I'm not a good babysitter.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
I don't want to, she's like, well, you're not babysitting, you're your own kid. I'm like, I know, but it just feels like,
right,
you know,
right,
like, especially with a 1-year-old, you know, it's like, he's a crazy person.
Yeah.
He's just,
yeah,
like relentless,
yeah,
and just, and I'm like, I'm just trying to keep him from dying.
Yeah.
We're not communicating, yeah, or anything. It's not like, it's not, we're having these quality moments, you know? So the hard thing has been to me, or the interesting and fun thing too, it's just the individual, they're three totally different people, yeah, totally different motivations, totally different personalities. And getting to know them and in the midst of that chaos is the biggest challenge, I think.
Yeah.
It's always like, I got to find a way to get Wilder out for a couple hours, just me and him.
Yeah, yeah.
Because,
yeah,
we can have, yeah, a conversation that he would never have with his brothers around.
Right.
They all act totally, they act like crazy people when they're with each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Pure fighting all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you get them off on the side, and they have these great, brilliant thoughts about,
yeah,
life.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
yeah.
So that part is awesome. I think the most of what you write is influenced by it, you know, because you're just seeing,
yeah,
yourself. And I think as somebody who is very serious, growing up and all that, the sort of mirror of childhood and what sort of trauma does and how it all influences that and all,
yeah,
that is like, it's just weighs really heavy, you know? And I think you learn a ton about yourself watching the kids, and they're, you know, you see,
yeah,
when they're nervous, go down to the basketball court or whatever. You see all this, like, I'm like, that was me. I know exactly what this feeling,
yeah,
is like.
Yeah.
And how did I have that? You know, what was, right, that insecurity that was causing that? And so there's been a lot, I would say the last, especially the End of Mystery record, the most recent one, there's a ton of stuff,
yeah,
about that,
mm-hmm,
you know, about what it means for me to be a child again.
Yes.
So, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And because it obviously is, that's it. You know, it's, yeah, like, you're sort of, I'm trying to make peace with these things that happened to me years ago that have formed this crazy driven person that,
right,
can't have fun.
Right,
know?
Right.
And these kids just have it naturally. You,
yeah,
know, they haven't had that situation.
So I'm so curious about this. Like, you have these three boys. You have a brother. You guys have been through all, you know, ups, downs, all the things. Because it always, all of us are informed by our experiences with our kids. We're looking, yeah, at our kids kind of going like, I know some things. I know some things I want to change. I know some things that were great. How is that informed? Because, I mean, you've spent so much time with your brother. How, and you've got three little brothers. You know, get these three,
right,
little,
yeah,
dudes, you know,
yeah,
and you're well-worn in how to be a brother and all those things,
yeah,
and making music and all these things, having successes, all these things. How is it? How are you thinking about that with them? Like, what are the things you kind of feel like?
Probably,
you know,
the biggest thing, I think, there's all kinds of things, but the biggest thing I think is, you know, our oldest is dealing with some stuff right now, some like hyperactive stuff, you know, just, you know, and so we've been taken to this place, Nurture House in Franklin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Amazing. Like, we're doing all this like behavioral therapy,
yeah,
and all,
yeah,
that. And,
yeah,
now we're the place, like, do we go the next step? Do we do whatever? So, but I think in the midst of all that, like, all of them are going to have their own challenges, trying to like give them, trying to let them know that the standard doesn't change. You know, like, analogy I would use is like when I was playing football in college, like all the skill positions players had these summer test run things.
Oh, wow.
And the skill position players had the same time. But like the guy, my quarterback is a guy, he's a coach at Florida now, Billy Napier.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Well, he was slow. He ran like a 5.40 maybe, you know.
Wow.
But I'm a 4.4.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
but,
yeah,
I've got the same time. So he had to work harder to get to that standard. And it's not that, hey, you got to meet the standard or we don't love you. It's not that, but it's just like behavioral things and those kind of things. It's like, hey, the expectation is the same. You're going to have to work harder at certain things, and everybody's got their own gifts. And so I think that's big. I think with siblings, it seems to me that especially when it's brothers, because there's a big time competition thing. It's like, now, you know, everything that the oldest one plays, the younger one wants to play, or who's better. And
yeah.
All
right.
Stuff.
Right.
It's like, look, we're going to judge this based on what we actually see, not what we think you're capable of, or not what, you know, we're hoping you can, you know, we can encourage you to do.
Right.
It's like, so I think that's big for them growing up, you know? And then the other thing is just, I don't know. I think as a parent, I'm trying to, just give them a dose of humanity, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know? And that's mostly maybe through me, you know, being like, giving them some like backstory to what I'm struggling with and those kind of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I try to frame that conversation about why we don't lie, you know, based on the fact like, listen, I struggle with that too. And here's the reasons why.
Yeah.
It's not because I'm just trying to get away with it. It's because I'm worried that this person won't love me if they find out the truth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like, do you feel that way? You know, like we kind of,
So
I think that to me, I don't know, it's the two like major things with the, with the guys.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
And luckily they're just growing up in a totally different environment.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I think early 80s was a great example of just like, it was just a really weird time to be a dude.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You
know? I mean, it's like, it was like in between, like there was a time when where it was horrible to be a dude, but like everybody's okay with it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And then the 80s are like it's like you're trying, all the Christians were trying to get dudes to be terrible. You know what I mean? But we knew it wasn't good. You know, it's like, it's just a really confusing time to grow up in. It's like, be a man. You know, like, don't be wrong. Oh, just be like, just... you know.
That is so true.
Expect a lot of your wife. You know, whatever. Yeah. Just like, I don't know. That's what the 80s to me was like. The sermon was kind of like, you know,
wives,
you know, don't say much to your husband when they come home. You know, like give them an hour.
Oh,
you know,
my whatever.
Gosh. Anyways, we're just living in it. I just feel like we're living in a more like emotionally aware time, which is awesome for boys, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I probably will be looking back at this. I mean, me and wife talk about all this, that we went too soft.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just like, did we really? I've been trying to talk to them about this mental toughness thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Right now, which is hilarious, because like it's like hot outside. They're like, can't do it. What's the point? I'm going back inside. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter what it is. I'm like, your mind can tell, can go, you know, is telling you this. Your body can go way farther than that. You know, I'm trying to like give them the pump up speech.
Yeah.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, John.
You know, starting the summer off on the right nutritious foot.
Oh, listen.
It's not always easy, you know?
Yeah, it's nearly August, John. A little. That's crazy. No, it's okay. It's a little late. You're a little late on that one. But, you know.
It's never too late to start thinking healthy.
Oh, I see what you're doing.
Athletic Greens AG1 formula is the easiest way to get your daily vitamins and minerals.
Today's episode is brought to you by Athletic Greens, the health and wellness company that makes comprehensive daily nutrition really, really, really ridiculously simple.
Oh, I thought you were going to say really again.
There's only two. Ridiculously simple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially when on tour.
Yep.
Dates available at johnmcl.com. And away from home, we also have VIP packages. Getting good sleep and healthy meals can be harder and harder and harder to come by, Dave.
I just wish you were going on tour soon. That's why we turned to AG1 by Athletic Greens, the category-leading superfood product that brings comprehensive and convenient daily nutrition to everybody.
Now, to help each of us be at our best, they simplify the path to better nutrition by giving you one solution that includes all the best things for you.
Whether you're on the road, John's touring this fall, or in the studio, I'm making the music, or sitting in the pickup line at school, Athletic Greens will help you stay healthy while on the go.
Just one tasty scoop of AG1 contains, let me tell you, Dave, 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients, including a multivitamin, a multimineral, a probiotic, green superfood blend, and more in one convenient daily serving.
The special blend of high-quality, bioavailable, coolest word ever maybe, ingredients in a scoop of AG1 work together to fill the nutritional gaps in your diet, support energy and focus, aid with gut health and digestion, and support a healthy immune system, effectively replacing multiple products or pills with one healthy, delicious drink.
Just so join the movement of musicians who are on tour and making new music. Athletes, dads, soccer moms, rookies, you name it, that are taking ownership of their daily health and nutrition.
To make it even easier, Athletic Greens is going to give you an immune-supporting, free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase if you visit athleticgreens.com/dadville today.
That's athleticgreens.com/dadville to give AG1 a try and take control of your health.
What would you say that you, as a dad, like lie in bed at night consistently sort of like worrying about, for lack of a better way of saying that? Like, I feel like I have my things that, and maybe it's a double-sided question, like I have my things that I need on any given day with my daughters to feel like I was successful, quote unquote, as a dad that day, you know? And and I have my things that I consistently lay in bed at night on any given night being like, I didn't really I didn't nail this today, or I did yeah. I did this thing that I always do that I hate about myself, whatever. Yeah. Like, what are those things for you that you feel like you need to feel successful as a dad?
Yeah, I think those things, I mean, just naturally, selfishly, however you would say, the things that I deal with most, you know.
Like yeah.
But I do think shame is a good one, probably, I think about the most. The idea of, like, you know, I'm always telling them it's okay to make mistakes. It's just like, buddy, everybody makes, this is like, if you can just greet a mistake in a friendly way.
Wow.
Like that would change everything about your life. You know?
Wow. As an aside, isn't it crazy to think that one of the first things we talked about today was the meetings where you saw what was wrong. You had to stand up in front of 70 people.
Right.
So yeah. Isn't that interesting?
It's been hammered in. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating.
And I think them understanding that their honesty, which I think mostly comes from that shame thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think those are the main things really that it's funny because you look at your kids like in some ways a couple, like one of them, I'm like, I'm not really worried about this guy. This kid has, he loves people.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we can deal with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You see, he's going to have other challenges. Yeah. Sure.
Like, it's not gonna be
he's
that.
Not going to be competitive. But, you know, because it's for a good reason. He just doesn't really want to beat anybody.
Right. Right.
You know,
right.
But like then there you have this. The other thing where like I have one kid that is just like the like Will Ferrell kind of like he's a frat guy. He's like going to probably play baseball. You know what I mean? Like he's a
hold on.
Everyone loves him.
I like that you're. Media association with frat guys was baseball,
right? I mean, it's you know what I mean. The guy from Florida, he's got a gold chain.
he's
that guy. It's just like, and but everybody likes him. He's hilarious. He charms all his teachers, all that kind of stuff. But he's gonna do exactly what he wants to do because he has no shame.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, his ultimate confidence.
Yes,
you know.
Yes.
So it's a totally different battle, I would say, with that. It's like trying to go like, man, you still have to like. There's some boundaries to this. You know,
it's. I mean, we talk about this with so many guests that come on, but. It's really hard managing, especially when you have numerous kids, where one is a lot like you, which is like wonderful in some ways because you're like, we speak exactly, not just the same language, like diction, like accent, it is exactly the same thing. So I get every move you're making, which is going to trigger a lot of things in me, but I also get it. You know, I know how to communicate pretty good. But then you have one that's maybe like a little like your wife, and then you got sort of you don't understand at all, which is really fun, but also super confusing.
Right.
And it's just so, it's like, you know, so much of the counsel we get in, you know, talking to people in this podcast is just how much attention you have to pay. And to your point, which is so beautiful, is to have some sense of similarity and standards, but in a way that honors who they are, that isn't too much like, well, your brother did that this fast.
Right.
It's like, well, I can't run as fast. Well, learn how to do it.
Right.
It's like, well,
that's not
going to work. Right. So really having the, you know, which I think sometimes in our society that I do think even in all of us that grew up when we did, it can feel a little like soft because you're like, these kids got to get out there and learn how to live. And it's like, okay, well, hold on there, Tex.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
you know, like it's a different world, but it is such a tricky thing to sort of know how to, you know, manage each of those ones. When one's probably like you, one's probably a little like your wife, and especially with three, then you get the wild card that you're kind of like, I don't know what to do with you. Or y'all have two, but one could be nothing like, you know, you're just always kind of looking at them going like, okay. And then they change.
Sure.
And you're like, well, I had the script.
What do I do
this.
Now?
This is not how you don't come home and say that happened at school. You're the kid. We don't have to worry about that.
Right.
And it's like, okay, well now I got to, okay, honey, let's sit down and learn how to manage all yourself. No.
Yeah.
It's always.
It's fun. Both my wife and I are very just like outward processor people.
Oh, wow.
So it's really fun to have, like, you know, the oldest is that way, which is great. So, like, I feel like we're really, if you're willing to talk about it, we can get it out.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I've got plenty of story time for you that we can do this.
Yeah.
And the challenge is more the ones that don't.
It's
you know, the frat kid is like, he's just, you know, like he has no interest in talking.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and it's not because he just doesn't have the need to.
Yeah.
Like he'd rather just watch that movie because it's fun.
Yeah.
Candy's good.
Yeah.
That's basically, you know, I mean, there's nothing under the surface of it.
Yeah.
It's just
yeah.
like, that's what it is. So
that's
more the challenge is to try to like, you know, how do you get to that place if there's not a relatable, you know, thing to talk about that goes there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's been the most fun thing so far to me as a parent has been this story time thing. Like I've gotten into this real routine with like telling them real stories.
Oh, wow.
And I'm way out of stories now. Like, way
like
out.
You mean real stories of
about my
your
life. And yeah, so we play this game. I'm like, you can pick any number between 0 and 40, basically. And they pick a number, and I try to think of a number, like a story from that
I
age.
I love this.
That's a great idea.
What a great idea.
And but what's bad is a seven-year-old, not bad, it's awesome. The seven-year-old now knows every story of my life. It's unbelievable. Better than I do. He's like, oh, no, that's not how it went. But it's cool now because like the four-year-old now is part of that thing. So he's hearing them, and I make the seven-year-old listen again. I'm like,
Sorry.
He doesn't know the story.
Yeah.
But that's been really, really fun because obviously there's a lot of failures in there.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's probably something that, you know, is I think that we're pretty good at, which is it's something that I don't know that my parents were, but just like that being able to say you're sorry. Mm-hmm. You know, the Switchfoot guys, like I always look at their like brotherhood as like the most amazing thing. They like their parents and everything.
What is wrong with these
people? There's, you know, you're like, that's, no, there's something wrong here. And there
you're
is
in a cult or you're
yeah, exactly. And I remember I asked John that. I was like, dude, what is the secret here? Yeah. Like, what did your parents do right? He goes, they were the first to apologize.
Jeez.
And I was like, oh, that's going to be hard.
Your first response.
Well, never mind. I guess, is there anything I can, is there like a payment plan for that? Or
you just put money in a counseling jar. Yeah. They'll figure it out later. Yeah.
But that has been, you see how powerful it is when it happens.
Yeah.
You know, like when you say, man, I really screwed that situation up. And and here's why. I was really worried about what these other people think. And that was not smart of me.
Yeah.
And this, I put that on you. And what? And then they're just eyes open. Like, it's some like tractor beam.
Oh,
thing,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's been really fun.
In those story times, do you kind of always have an eye? I mean, which you don't have to. I'm not inferring this. But do you, when, you know, they say 17, you're like, all right, are you sort of like, teacher dad moment trying to keep an eye on like how can I maybe bring in some or you just kind of
not
tell
really
them,
oh, okay, I just try okay. I mean at first I was just trying to think of stories that involve poop you know what I mean like it was like what are they gonna like
yeah
you know what I mean?
What's gonna trend well
and that's the ones they've told many people now like oh do you know dad pooped his pants one time. You know, that's their like intro to me.
You walk in and you're like, why are all the dads standing?
They're looking at me like I'm like I've got a problem, but yeah, so that's how it's, I mean, really how it started, just trying to come up with entertaining things.
Yeah,
that,
okay.
You know,
yeah,
they would
okay.
be like, but it is crazy how much it's like, even in the story like that, you know, like a kind of famous story where I did it in college, I pooped my pants on a date and go into it later, but some other time. But that, even that, it's like, why didn't I just go home? You know, but like I'm at this date and I'm literally trying to like make it through the date, even though it's happened. I just I'm wearing khakis and I've got a button up Oxford shirt on, you know, like, and I literally just untuck it so it covers the brown spot on my khakis.
that kind of, I feel like just knowing that says so much about your friend.
Like, oh, it's like, can't let them know.
We're finish powering this
date. That's right.
I mean, Reinhardts aren't quitters.
That's right. We're going to this movie
and we're going to like it.
Anyways, so it comes around to those kind of things of like, hey, anytime that happens, just go home. Just tell people. It's part of life.
That's the
awful.
That's the lesson.
Just like, yeah.
Yeah, that's the lesson for life.
how did you come up with that idea of like pick a number between me and zero? And
I think my dad was doing it with them first.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so he has this, he has all these, like, he collects like pencils and stuff from places he's been, like little memorabilia things. And so he was doing that kind of thing. Like okay, pick a pencil and tell me, I'll tell you about that city
so
or wherever I was.
Such a great idea. I'm going to do that with my girls.
The only problem with me is I just don't remember a lot. It's really embarrassing. Like, just
well, it's loose. It's like when they say 17, I'm like, well, might have been 15, might have been 20, it's close. You know, the rules are
asterisk. It's loose.
It's not
story time.
It doesn't have to be that accurate. But,
that is amazing.
Yeah, it's all. I mean, I try to tell stuff about their mom too. Like, that's really fun.
Yeah.
Because there's just nothing like that. Like, she can tell them, but if I tell them about how, like, amazing it was she did this thing. Or if she fell or something like that.
That's
super intriguing to them of understanding that, how that all works.
Oh, yeah, like super mom.
Yeah. They're at the age, you know, they think where the boy-girl thing is like a,
oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, boys are really strong.
Yeah,
girls,
yeah, yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, listen, dude. you need to know this. Yeah. Your mom is way stronger than me, way tougher.
Oh, gosh,
like, you have
dude.
No idea.
Oh, that's not yeah. even.
And I was telling him, I was like, your mom was giving birth to three kids. I was like, that's the most, one kid, I was like, that is the strongest thing anybody can do, toughest thing people yeah. can do in
yeah,
this
yeah.
life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were like, well, I mean, not as tough as like Hulk. You know, not as tough as like, they were, I mean, they really are like, my 7 year old's obsessed with a pack. Because of Batman, I think. That's how it started. But like, we'll be in the mall and we're walking by Abercrombie & Fitch, you know, some guy on there. Yeah, he's like, Dad, look at that pack.
Oh, like a six pack.
Yeah.
Pack.
He's like, why don't you have a pack like
the
that?
Pack.
Look at literally, pack. I was drinking a Diet Coke a few weeks ago and he goes, why are you drinking that? It's bad for you. And I was like, I know it's bad for me, but just like occasionally I really like it. Just yeah. whatever. He goes, that might be why you don't have a pack.
No. My
thanks,
kids,
buddy.
My kids last week. This is like one of the. My wife laughed so hard in front of me at this. We're sitting there, and she goes, "Sam, our little 5-year-old, shameless one. He's. I mean, I love this about him, but it drives us crazy sometimes. But she's like, Sam, tell Daddy what you said in the car today. And he was like, what did I say? She's like, remember about Mr. Reed, our friend? And he goes, oh yeah. And I mean, no, looks at me in the eyes, like without blinking. It's like, oh yeah, I just told mommy, like, you know, Mr. Reed, he's like a builder. He's like a builder. He's like a strong builder. And Dad, you're more like funny. And I was like, what? Why can't I be
Wait,
both?
What?
And I literally said, I'm not a builder. He's like, no. He's like, you're like, but you're funny. And I was like,
I mean, I like you. Don't get me wrong, but just
hey,
be
thanks
honest
for the work you do. But yeah, you're not building
you
anything.
You build up to a punchline.
I literally made jokes. I was like, so how about building a career? And of course, he's already left the room. Yeah, like, yeah. Following him, trying to prove. Yourself. You know, it's like, look at this yearbook. Look what I built this from. Okay, look at this nerdy kid. Dude, thank you for being on. So we always do a couple of questions at the very end. I'll ask the first one. Okay, so what is the one thing you want your boys to know?
Just that I love them no matter what they do. I think that's it. It's well, I've been telling them that. Like, we've gotten a real habit of it. I'll tell them, I'm like, hey, you know I love you. It doesn't matter what you do. I'll love you forever.
Just that. Wow.
And so I think hopefully that sticks somewhere if it's 10 years down the road when they've made the mistake.
So you make sure you say that too. Not just I love you, but
yeah.
Oh, I love
I'm
that.
Like, even if... And their mom's really good at it too. She's kind of like, so I feel like they kind of roll their eyes when they say it back to us now, to the point where she's like, hopefully that means you've memorized this.
That's right.
You
know, that's
right.
Like, when that mistake hits, you're going to know, like, I can go home and tell them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, cause inevitably that's going to happen. And I just want them to know we're there when it does.
When you get a call for the poop pants.
That's right.
Come get them.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. You get kicked out of college like a granddad.
Oh my God.
I'll be here for you.
Oh my gosh.
All right, last question. What do you want your kids to say at your funeral?
Oh, man. I like the idea that they saw me make mistakes and take risks. I really like that. That would mean to me that we had the kind of relationship that they knew the good and the bad side, you know? Mm-hmm. And also that I'd never stop living. I think one thing that I've taken away from like a lot, like Drew Holcomb is a good example, like has a really good, you know, family sort of life. You
oh
know?
Yeah.
And not just his immediate, but like his dad and,
yeah, oh, yeah.
and all this
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it's hard for kids to listen to somebody, who doesn't like their life.
Wow.
You know what I mean? I think there's something about it. Like if I was to say, hey, this is what you ought to do, at some point they realize why, because you're miserable.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't,
man,
what you're saying is not the,
right.
So I think keeping the priority, you know, on our marriage and my life, my dreams and goals also alongside theirs, I think is really, to me, important to be believable.
That is so wise. Jeez. I've never thought about that. I think that's always a trick with what we do. I mean, we kind of talked about this earlier when we were thinking about our time with you, is like how you navigate that sort of, I mean, John Acuff says this all the time about when he travels. He's a business author, friend of ours, but his wife scolded him one time basically and was like, cause he'd get anxious before he left. And like, he's got two girls and he'd say, well, okay, daddy's got to go work and he's got to go. And she, same thing with Drew and Ellie, they do this, but like, you know, finally his wife was like, you are making them anxious. They right. are reading you.
Right.
And why don't you instead, which I know Drew and Ellie do, like, hey, I get to go play shows. Like, yeah. I get to go write songs. I get to daddy.
This is what I love.
This yeah. is what I love. Yeah. And I've never, that's such a great, what a great thought. Like, yeah, you it is hard to listen to someone give advice when you don't, when you're like, you just seem kind of miserable.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, yeah, it's tough. And
well, I think we always underestimate how much our kids, or just kids in general, watch your actions. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll just speak for myself. I tend to focus on what, like on any given moment, like, okay, here's where I need to say something to them. Mm. And not that they don't ever listen to what we say, but I mean, 95% of it is they're observing what you're doing, your actions, your body language, your interaction with your spouse, et cetera, your interaction with, you know, your relationship with work, all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, 5% is what you're saying. But if those two things don't line up, then, you know, you're not going to fool them.
They just can see it. If I feel like when I catch myself, like, I'm telling you this thing, but I'm really not telling it because for you. I'm saying this because I'm actually worried about what other people are going to think yeah. about us in yeah. this scenario.
Yeah. Right.
And you
right.
know that.
Yeah. yeah.
Like, I'm so dumb sitting here trying to convince you of really, like, I've got the problem. Hmm. I'm worried about mm-hmm. all these things. Like, how do I separate those two? And they really pick up on the worry more than they do whatever you're saying.
Yeah. So true. So true.
If there's one thing that I have learned, like the number one thing that I've learned from doing this podcast, it is that most of my anxiety about my kids has to do with just my own mm-hmm. stuff, you know, and most of the time they're fine.
Yeah.
And I'm putting on this whatever scenario, this issue that I have probably from my childhood, I'm putting onto this scenario where they're like, no, I'm fine. You know,
yeah.
I'm playing by myself, but I'm fine.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah. I feel like that's huge with my wife. It's like, she can tell when I'm being that way. I can tell where she is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a great mirror in that way. To be like, I don't think this is really about them right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. Right. Well, you know, we had Herb Street on a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying about sports. He's like, you know, just being a dad, trying to navigate, like, you know, this is their life. They're not living my story. I'm living my story. Like,
right.
they are okay, and I don't need to put all of my stuff on them. They lost the game, and like, bro, are you okay? Or like, do we need to have? And he's like, yeah, I'm fine. Like, you sure you're okay? Like,
no, I got to push through this. Yeah, there's pain in there. There's
I can pain. Tell.
Yeah, that's great. Well, dude, thank you for being on.
Dude,
thank
of course,
you,
man.
Thank you.
Great
thank you.
With
thank you.
Thanks for having me.